Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Regional Roundup with Leslie Lopez, regional correspondent with the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, you're in the breakfast huddle this Wednesday morning. You're here with Elliot Danko, Manisha Tank and Ryan Huang. And wow, what a dramatic start to the week it's been.
On Monday, news emerged of Myanmar's military coup after leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other figures in the ruling National League for Democracy Party had been detained.
The army handed power to military chief General Min Aung Hlaing and imposed a year-long state of emergency.
Yeah, so 24 ministers and deputies from Aung San Suu Kyi's government have been removed. Of course, the ruling junta have named 11 replacements in this new administration.
And the move comes after days of escalating tension between the civilian government and the Myanmar military in the aftermath of the November election. That's when the NLD won a landslide, but the army says the election was fraudulent.
So this morning we have news that this move has sparked condemnation from Western leaders and a threat of renewed sanctions by the US government. Let's get more analysis. Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez is on the line with us. Leslie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Elliot. Good morning, Manisha. I'm good.
Crazy stuff in Myanmar. We've got a new ruler over there. Could you give us a little bit more background to this coup? Because it took us by surprise on Monday morning.
Well, you know, it did take everyone by surprise. But now when people look back and look at the comments from the military, it clearly was on the cards. They didn't do anything out of the ordinary, given that they were, you know, their slippage in power after the elections last year. And clearly, the military has decided that it's not taking any more chances. And what the junta did was basically use the provisions within the constitution that they themselves drafted to basically take power, you know. And so I think we're going back to Myanmar is going back to military rule now. The question is, what will the citizens do after this? You know, will they be emboldened to decide to, you know, come out or, you know, and protest against this move, or, you know, whether this they'll be able to, or whether the junta will be able to, you know, sort of like put public anger and public grief are under a lid, and they hold elections maybe in a year's time, when I'm sure they're going to change the constitution again to make sure that this thing doesn't happen, you know, just like in Thailand.
There are clearly so many questions around this story, Leslie. And just anecdotally, you know, I've seen pictures online. There was a girl who was filming a video, a dance video. Yes, you've seen this. And I looked at that and I thought, this is just indicative. It made me think about what the citizens of Myanmar must be thinking.
Well, you know, here's a young democracy and people are just coming out of this. They clearly were very, very, you know, upbeat after the huge win for Aung San Suu Kyi in December. And I think it is really sad. It's really sad because how this thing just caught everyone in the country by surprise. Because after such a huge win, I don't think anyone expected the military to really do this, you know, and use this voter fraud argument as a basis to seize power.
Right. I'm just picking up on a couple of things that you said, Leslie, and it's piqued my interest. So you mentioned that they're able to do this because of something that's already in the constitution, like a provision, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you've got that. You've got the elections, which was well received. And now they're saying, which you mentioned earlier on, that the military is going to hold free and fair elections after the emergency is over. But at the same time, they want to prevent a repeat of, you know, whatever's happened. How possible is this? Is this going to be? How are they going to accomplish this?
Well, clearly, you see, they've taken power, and surely the constitution has been suspended.
Okay.
The general presumption is that a new constitution will be drafted, where I'm sure they will pack the deck with more to ensure that the military has more representatives in parliament, in the lower house. So the public and whoever represents the people of Myanmar will never have a greater say over the military on what happens in Myanmar. But so that clearly is going to be the case.
But they will have to do all this with international pressure as well.
Well, you know, the thing is that this is where it is going to be a delicate balance. The Myanmar government has been very, very clever, and the military too has been very clever in balancing their interests between China and the West. And I think this is going to become another proxy, you know, kind of battle between the new Biden administration and China too. So it's going to be critical how this thing plays out. And you know, there's one thing that I think analysts have acknowledged too, and that the Myanmar military, the junta, is an organization that is tough to read. You know, they don't play by any kind of normal playbook, and they are very, very tough to read. So all of this is, you know, we're entering into very new territory, and what the junta does next is really, you know, up in the air. They can do anything, and like I said, they're just tough to read.
Yeah, right, and they can control the information flow as well. Jeez. Of course, they shut the internet down this week. Okay, I know there are so many questions we can ask, but I'm sure we will come back to this subject in the coming weeks. Let's move on. As we often do, we will talk about Malaysia now. The downgrade of the economic outlook for Malaysia to 10% from 11.5% previously. I mean, one of the questions that jumps out straight away is how might all of this affect foreign investment into the country? You've still got these COVID-19 cases rising.
Well, you know, foreign investment has taken, you know, Malaysia's ability to attract foreign investment has taken a hit. The numbers are pretty clear in terms of direct foreign investment. I mean, just over the last few weeks alone, foreign investors have withdrew more than, you know, close to 100 million, more than 100 million US out of local equities during the third week of 2021. Compared to, you know, 60 million in the previous week. So, you know, this all aren't very good signs for the economy. And this lockdown that is going to be extended to February 18, it's just only going to create more problems for not just in terms of foreign investment, but also domestic investment and domestic economic activity. People are going to the Chinese New Year with, you know, very, very bearish sentiment. People are down, frustrated, and wondering, you know, really how much more lockdown will impair, you know, their personal lives, you know, and personal businesses and everything else. So the mood here is pretty grim.
But we still give attention to the hottest book that everyone's anticipating. Former AG, Tommy Thomas, Malaysian AG, that is, he's back in the headlines. Now he's got former Prime Minister Najib Razak demanding an apology and 10 million ringgit because of allegations in the book. I believe he had something to do with Chapter 42, which touches on the murder of Mongolian Al Tantuya Sharil Bu back in 2006. I mean, he's asking for an apology. He's asking for 10 million. He's got his own problems, former PM Najib. Is he going to get this apology?
Well, you know, this is going to be interesting. I mean, you know, Thomas's book has clearly ignited a lot of attention and at the same time become a magnet of huge controversy too because of, you know, I think we mentioned this last week, you know, questions over what was addressed in the book and what was not addressed in the book during his 22 months in office.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Najib filing, issuing a letter of demand is probably one of the many that we're going to see in the coming days, because Thomas's book clearly provided a lot of revelation about what happened within government during that time. There is debate whether, you know, he may have breached his own secret, the secrecy oath that he took in when in office, by divulging all of this. So I think we've not seen the end of this yet. Najib's letter of demand is probably the beginning. I'm sure there are other people who've been mentioned in the book who may feel that they were kind of maligned, will clearly take some kind of action, following the lead from former PM Najib. I'm sure that's going to happen. So we're going to see more on this now in the coming days.
Oh, boy. And if he loses, he's going to be hoping he's got enough sales proceeds. Leslie Lopez, Straits Times regional correspondent, speaking with us this morning. Leslie, appreciate your time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you, Ed. Take care.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.